What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Greg Hunter, good morning to you. How are you?
Jeff Grant, yeah.
Was it raining where you were last night as well? Because that weather looked pretty bad. The rain in Spain falls mainly everywhere.
It's a little bit of a strange one, given that the last three Madrid matches have been under an absolute deluge, and it's affected them. I mean, you know, tough luck. But both the Clásico, which they should have won by a bucket full of goals and didn't, then the Betis game that drew 0-0, causing Rafa Nadal, playing in the Barcelona Open of tennis, to exclaim when he heard the scoreline, that's the league gone. And now this one, which, you know, I don't expect many little violins to be played in sympathy for them, because that's the weather, ain't it? But when you're a slow, tired, aging team, as Real Madrid are, and you're playing against... I think at the last count, it was 16 Chelsea players on the pitch at the same time. And it's absolutely bucketing down. And you're sodden, you're slowing down still. The pitch is starting to give way under your feet. It didn't help them whatsoever. So if Florentino thinks he can fix how European football goes, he may want to start with the weather, you're right.
Or stick a roof on the training ground, maybe. That's the...
It's an idea. You know? It's an idea. Yeah, it's a shame. Shame for them, isn't it? That the new state. This isn't what you want to talk about. But the new stadium will not only have a roof, like a sort of Bela Lugosi thing. The pitch is going to sleep under the Paseo Castellano, this massive long road that kind of splits Madrid and runs alongside the site of the Santiago Bernabeu. It's going to become an event stadium, whereby, for the, I don't know how many times, 19 league matches and 10 European and 6 cup. Let's say at maximum 40 times a year, they'll take the pitch, they'll elevate the pitch from buried way under the road and elevate it and put it in place in the stadium. And the stadium will be covered when they want it to be, and air conditioned and so on and so forth. It's going to be an extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary place, which will make them so much more money than they have right now. Assuming, you know, given that Florentino was out selling the big issue the other day, assuming they make it that far, then yes, it's a little bit sad for them that they didn't have a roof over the stadium in Valdebebas last night.
Thomas Tuchel is clearly a student of football. He's obviously a very good manager and clearly watched what Liverpool didn't do in the previous game. We're like, I might not try that. I might actually go after your old guys.
And the expression perfect storm is when several things coincide and you go, wow, how did that happen? Because he did. And Tuchel's done that in each of the four times previously. I've been at or reporting on all of the four previous ties when a pair of 2-2s with Dortmund and Real Madrid in the group stage, and then a thrashing in Paris from Tuchel's Paris Saint-Germain, and then a 2-2 at the Bernabeu, where Madrid controlled the game, were two up, should have run away with it, and Tuchel's men kept pressing and harassing and chasing and snarling, and they finally got a 2-2 again. I thought last night was identical in concept, yeah. Tuchel must have taken messages from the Liverpool game, and we knew coming in that Chelsea were different from Liverpool, that they are, I don't know, average age younger, but they're certainly, they've been less spent over recent seasons, marching all over Europe, dominating the Premier League, running till the lungs and legs don't work anymore. And therefore, it was always the prospect that, for example, Kroos and Modric, each of whom have been out injured recently, each of whom were, you know, well over 30, Benzema too, Carvajal, Nacho, all of those guys were going to be really chased within an inch, a millimetre of their life. But the perfect storm thing comes when Casemiro, a little bit younger than his cohorts, and normally the guy who'll sort of sack the players in the other team when they try to launch passes. Just stands off Rudiger for the first goal, stands off him and says to him, you know, try a showboat quarterback pass. And it was the mirror image, the exact opposite of what was happening when whoever it was, I think it was Mane and Salah and Jota, didn't close down Toni Kroos in the game that you're referring to, and he launched for Asensio and Vinicius. Well, Rudiger did the same for Pulisic, and until the 1-1, and more particularly until after halftime, do you know, Jar, I'm envisaging if you paired together this game and the Betis game, which not all of your viewers and listeners will have seen at the weekend, but if you can imagine being in any company and the boss, the executives tell you, this is your goal, this is everything, this is where your salary comes from, this is where your bonuses are, this project that you're on, this building project, this campaign that you're designing, whatever it is, this is everything. And then about 8 months into that project, the big boss goes into the media, doesn't tell you, and says, well, that project, you know, it stinks of rotten eggs. This is their new goal. And the people in the office are like, oh, well, thanks for that. And that's how Real Madrid have been playing since Florentino came out and said, you know, La Liga and the Champions League, you know, bleh. You know, I want this. And, oh, lads, this thing you've been, you know, busting your bollocks off over for the last 8 months and the things that's made you supersede tiredness and any worries about COVID, that doesn't really matter. And I'm sorry I didn't tell you directly. And Real Madrid have been playing like a bunch of men who are supreme professionals, are born winners, and who still value the work that they've been putting in themselves. But they're like, oh, well, the guy who runs the club isn't all that keen on La Liga or the Champions League. And they've lost a yard in both of the last two games since the furore when Florentino not only made an absolute, you know, idiot of himself the first time, but then continued on his own to declare that, you know, this Super League thing is still a project. And, you know, across, when I listen into your programs, Chair, you cover all sports with brilliance. And the number of times I've heard people across, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, on the back of a horse or it's basketball or it's golf or it's somebody at the elite level of NFL or soccer or rugby, GAA, psychology comes up again and again and again. That brilliant place you can go to when you're in the zone, when the psychology is perfect. If you don't have that edge where great champions or would-be champions say, well, this is where I lost it. Well, you know, what the hell was Florentino Perez thinking to come away with this nonsense at a time when his team stood a chance of knocking Chelsea out? They haven't lost that chance completely, but he hasn't helped, Chair. And the evidence was on the pitch last night.
Yeah, like that is a really interesting conversation around the fact that they haven't lost this chance at all. And in fact, it seemed to the naked eye that they'd almost arrested something that was getting away from them a little bit in that first half. It came down to Chelsea, or to Real Madrid, having a number nine who is exceptionally good at his job and has been throughout his entire Champions League career, compared to Chelsea, who's got a number nine who really can find a goal at the moment. That's the sort of thing that could be absolutely vital in a second leg.
I couldn't agree more. If you're talking about Werner, I had a conversation with one of my best people at a high level at Liverpool when the race was on last summer, and I put forward to him. I said, listen, I think he's not a natural finisher. He's a flat track bully. The number of goals scored in the Bundesliga was notable last season, but if you look at him in any high level game, when I was following for club or country, the thing you noticed was that if Werner gets beyond a back line on his own, or if he served up something against a minor team with minor pressure, there's a guy who isn't only the product of his pace, but nonetheless, he's somebody who, because throughout his life, because of his pace, hasn't learned the intricacies of finishing. He's kind of been used to shooting fish in a barrel because he gets into positions time and time again whereby he's more likely to score and for in situations whereby it's not all or nothing, as you're describing last night was. And I feel vindicated that across this season, I don't want to say the poor guy suffer, but across this season, what's led to his kind of dread of being put in a pressure situation is that he's missed again and again and again. And I think last night was one of the worst, because the setup header from Pulisic was was glorious. And yeah, you've got Courtois, big old octopus hands, ready to try and smother you. But the goal was gaping. And on a scale, you know, that was a 9.9 out of 10. It's a goal. And Benzema's was a 1.1 out of 10 that is... it should have been a goal, and I agree with you. It was glorious, absolutely phenomenal finish. But, you know, to compound the thing, Chelsea went to sleep. That I really meant that little joke that at times, and I think this is a symbol of any great performance, at times I wasn't just counting. Are there really only 11 blue shirts on here? Some of the Real Madrid players looked like they were counting instead of paying attention to their duties. And then at that corner, when you feel that if Chelsea just inch up towards another gear, they put Real Madrid out and Chelsea are going to the final in Istanbul. At that corner, it's the simplest of things. All the prep that Gerard was talking about, that, you know, Tuchel and his team were looking at the Liverpool-Real Madrid game. You look at any Real Madrid game and it's about a sort of 60-40 margin about whether Kroos will put the ball into the penalty area or he'll knock it short to Modric. And they allowed Kroos and Modric out there on their own and Marcelo. And Kante in the end is scampering out, but it's too late. And what they've given is, because everybody in the box knows what this move is going to bring, it's rehearsed. And Marcelo's passing, crossing angle is fantastic. After that, it needs Casemiro to outjump whoever, I think, outjump Rudiger. And then it needs Militao to outjump Christensen. But at the point the ball arrives at Benzema, you know, it's only the greats, only the greats. And the numbers... the idea that, you know, I don't like the idea of people being an awful upset about Lewandowski. And Lewandowski is a finisher, but he's not half the player Benzema was. And the fact that Benzema's drawn even with Raul at the top of the scoring charts and with Lewandowski out, if Benzema manages to carry on in this tournament for two more matches, he should probably overtake Lewandowski and get up there as, what, I don't know, third top scorer, in and around third top scorer of the all-time Champions League. That doesn't do him justice. He invents movements, he invents assists, he sees space in a way that most people get befuddled by. It's been not right from the outset, but increasingly across his, well, over 10, or 11 years in Spain, it's just been outright Rolls-Royce pleasure watching him throughout. He's exceptional. And it just makes football fun to watch. Doesn't matter who you support, he's extraordinary.
I don't think he ever went through a period like Timo Werner is going through now, but Benzema has had his tough moments. Maybe it was just one season, Graham, I'm just kind of speaking from memory here, but what did he do? What did he change after that one season or whatever it was to become, in this amazing company, the deserved top four, in the top four scorers in Champions League history?
There's such a list. For example, he's, without being judgmental, he's always been involved in things away from the pitch that have caused huge controversy. And gradually, one of the things he's done is to learn to completely detach one from the other. And he's done that extraordinarily. Secondly, there was a moment when Benzema said, Zidane, not his coach at this stage. I think at that stage, Zidane would have been either a club ambassador or nominally the football director of the club. And he took Benzema aside and said, you're not lean enough. And he said to him, look, this is how I live. There's a nice sort of health spa up in the Dolomites where summertime, go there. They change your eating habits. And he lost 4 or 5 kilos. He's never put those kilos back on again. He stayed completely live and lean and athletic well into what will be, I think he'll turn 34 in December, if my memory's good. And he's still playing like he were 27, 28. That was a big change because he was never in any way rotund, but he did carry more weight than he does now. And Zidane helped him sort that. And one of the great things that changed him into the beast that you're admiring now on is that people often say, and I've often used this phrase and I mean it, that in cycling terms, he became sort of lead domestique to the team leader, which was Ronaldo. And everybody says, well, he did that role brilliantly. And now what's exceptional is that that's probably, since Cristiano left, I think that's about 90 goals that Benzema has scored, a ratio far greater than when he was supporting actor. But the process of learning how to create space for Cristiano, the process of working out how to play as a two, And not just to say, here's the ball, boss, here's the ball, boss. None of that nonsense. He was strategically involved in working out what the other side couldn't do, where Cristiano would arrive, when occasionally, because Benzema did score when Cristiano was in the team, when occasionally it was a better option to go himself. That learning process dovetails exactly with what you're asking, because he became a completely different footballer than the guy at Lyon or the guy who arrived at Real Madrid and was in outright competition with Higuain. And that would be my last point. When Mourinho slagged him off in public, they were about to go and play at Osasuna, I think. And Higuain was absent, and Mourinho, you know, clown that he is, said, you know, if you've got to go hunting and you don't have your hunting dog, then you take a cat with you. What a man. And Benzema knew he was talking about him, and he went and saw him, you know, finger in the chest time about, I respect you and I work for you and don't speak about me. And again, that was the making of the man. He stood up to Mourinho and gradually won his place against Higuain compared to previously. Eventually Mourinho moved on. That made a big difference to Benzema. And he spent his whole life modelling himself on Ronaldo and Nazario, the Brazilian, because they're still in close contact now. Obviously this last year by phone only. But when you have that as a role model and you go through all the learning experiences at the most political club in the world, then either you get spat out or it turns out that you're all-time great, and Benzema's all-time great. The one last thing is, obviously, as controversial as his exclusion from the France team has been, you know, it's helped him. Fewer injuries, less travel, more recuperation time. That helps.
It's funny, the international football thing helping elongate careers. Might have been interesting to see what would happen in the Super League if all those players were banned from playing international football. That's an aside that would take an hour to tease out. What about tonight's game? We're all incredibly excited if both teams can have something approximating, if their superstars can play, particularly Mbappe. What do you expect to happen over these two legs? Because I kind of don't really understand or know yet what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm in every aspect. It's so tantalising because we are definitely looking at Mbappe, one of the most phenomenal emergences in this game that we love for many, many years. I've got no doubt about that. I haven't since I was interviewing John Collins, ex-Monaco, who'd recently been asked to take over Monaco again by the Prince and hadn't, and the Russian had bought in. And for the big interview, John said, look out, there's some really special players. One of them is Mondi, another one is Mbappe. And John at that stage, and Mbappe at that stage was 17, said, look, in Monaco, they're talking about a player who's already greater than Thierry Henry was at that age and will go on to equal him. And I thought, well, okay, it's a big claim. And you kind of see where they were going. I think Mbappe is extraordinary. And as you look at this tie, I think that Paris Saint-Germain are in slightly better form, probably in slightly better physical shape. And if they can impose that and unleash Neymar and Mbappe, I'm assured both of them are going to be available, then they're a really good team, I think. I think they're a better team than they've been throughout this massive star-studded rebuild under the ownership that has spent so many hundreds of millions. I think they're a tougher, better matched unit across the pitch than they have been. And therefore, that's a test for City. And the thing that will attract me most tonight and next week is that Guardiola's regime is looking in need of a night like this. They've done so many things which have been extraordinary, enlightening. They've changed the perception of football in England a little bit. I think that they've been admirable in a number of things they've done, including the way that they play, the number of goals they score, how they score the goals, the chess-like changing of positions on the pitch as a concept, not just in the midst of red-hot action. All of these things have taught us, they've made us think, even for those who disavow that style of play or Guardiola's ideas, it challenges you to think. So right across from ourselves in this industry, from the fans, right through everybody who's involved in the science of football. What Guardiola's been doing has been, you know, a shot of energy, a shot of development into the game, and I think it's absolutely laudable personally. But do I see them as outright favourites? I probably don't. And I think that they've been in need of a big night where they do, the old-fashioned thing, where they go, it's against us here. We're going to dig deep and we're going to produce either mountains of character, mountains of stubbornness, moments of genius. Because I don't think often they've done that. And the Aguero moment for Mancini was separate. It was up on a little ivory tower of its own. But it's interesting that that's the thing that will abide forever and ever as a moment, as a game. Compared to maybe many of Guardiola's City games, this would be the time. And I think they've got their work cut out tonight. Tiny little bit of form, tiny little bit lacking energy, one or two of the key players shaking off injury. And therefore, I suppose the last time it was Guardiola Pochettino, by my memory at least, was at or around the stages of the Champions League. And it was, in the first leg, they dominated away from home against a Pochettino team. Spurs missed a penalty. In the second leg, they had that crazy offside goal, the Llorente handball that helped shape how FIFA rules on handball were then interpreted. It was a colossal game. And everything went against Guardiola and his team for whatever reason. So they need to reverse that tonight. I genuinely think this needs to be one of those nights where both things fall for you and some of his men do exceptional things. That has to be the case. Otherwise, Paris Saint-Germain are certainly good enough to head off to Manchester with a lead.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Graeme, you've set the scene beautifully for us. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
Graeme Hunter giving us his thoughts there. Yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts too. I know loads of you have got in touch and we'll get to them in just a couple of minutes. 087 9180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Or, of course...
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.